In a surprise to absolutely nobody, Corbin Burnes is your opening day starter. We're going to dive into it and also start previewing the NL Central. Don't go anywhere. This is Locked On Brewers.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in. Happy Wednesday, everybody. I'm Dominic Catronio, along with Vinny Rutino. Thanks for making us your first listen of the day. This is Locked On Brewers, your only daily podcast dedicated to the Milwaukee Brewers. And yesterday, we had breaking news, Vinny. It rained in Arizona.
Breaking news. Breaking news, Dom.
Yep. That's the only news of the day, that it rained in Arizona.
I don't think that's the only news.
Corbin Burnes has been officially named the opening day starter for the Milwaukee Brewers. We touched on this in yesterday's episode, and really for the last week, that this seems like it was coming, lining up the days. When he did read that this morning, what was your first reaction?
Yeah, I mean, it's ho-hum for me at this point. I mean, I think with a lot of people, there's no surprises here. I think the only thing that was in question was whether or not Brandon Woodruff, because he has been the opening day starter the last two seasons, and then he finished fifth in the Cy Young Award vote. He got actually demoted from that opening day start. But I think that he's not going to have any problem with that. Corbin Burnes was the Cy Young last year. He was unbelievable. He is the leader. I mean, he can't say he's the leader of the pitching staff, but I mean, look, the guy was historically good. I mean, he set a record in the first how many starts did that take him to get that record for the most strikeouts in Major League history without issuing a walk? I mean, he just had a remarkable season, and he deserves it. He earned it. It's totally incredible where he came from in 2019 and how bad he was in 2019 to what he did last year. And again, he earned it, and I think everyone's good with it, and they're excited, and we're all excited for it.
So a reminder, 2019, here is the line from Corbin Burnes. In 32 games, four of them were starts. He was 1-5 with an 8.82 ERA, a FIP of over 6. He allowed 17 home runs in 2019. Granted, there was a juiced ball that year, but still, 17 home runs in 2019. That was in 49 innings, okay? So they scrapped the four-seamer. And since then, in over 220 innings since, he has allowed 9 home runs. This dude is dominant.
Yeah, and that's the remarkable thing. I kind of did a double take during last year when I was getting ready for the pre and post game show, wanting to talk about Burnes and how remarkable he's been. There's so much to talk about with him in terms of the numbers and how good he really was, and it's the extra base hits that he didn't give up. Was absolutely incredible, and the ability to just not give up hard contact. I mean, he actually got unlucky a bunch of times last year, right, with some of these soft contact little squibbers that would go for hits, little dinks over the infield, because again, he just stays off, he either misses barrels or misses bats completely or stays off the barrel, and that is a recipe for striking a lot of dudes out. And because he throws strikes with all five pitches in the zone, that is not issuing walks. And then that is also a recipe for not giving up much hard contact. And at the end of the day, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to limit that hard contact and just pitch and keep these guys off balance. That's what he did. And yeah, 8 home runs given up, or nine since that 2019 season. It's totally remarkable. How do you do that? Like, go from giving up bombs left and right to keeping the ball in the yard at the best rate in the major leagues.
And to your point about hard hits, so last year his hard hit rate allowed was his lowest of his career, 30.7%, which maybe to the blind eye sounds like a lot. Well, the MLB average is nearly 40%. So it's pretty remarkable there. Also, when you look at talk about bad luck, his batting average on balls in play against him was .309, which is technically above average. But then you remember he's striking everybody out. So the ones that are getting in play are these bloops like you're talking about. He still struck out 36% of his batters last year. 36%! That's
incredible.
Insane!
And keep in mind, too, Dom, his exit velocity on average was, let's look that up real quick on Baseball Savant. I'm guessing it's in the 99th percentile. So he's at the top of the league in not giving up hard contact, but his BABIP was above average, just slightly above average. Usually when guys keep the ball on the ground and they don't give up hard contact, that BABIP is actually going to kind of equalize at a much lower and you know, regress to the mean to a much lower number. I don't know what that number is. That's something for a statistician or a sabermetrist. But I'm guessing it's in the, you know, 250, 270 range with how low and weak that contact was all last year and how many ground balls he got as well. So he actually got that 309 number is surprising, you know, because it's higher than what you would expect from Corbin Burns.
So to your point on his average exit velocity allowed was 85.5 miles an hour, which is in the top 4% of Major League Baseball. If you haven't clicked around on Baseball Savant before, listeners, do it. It's the best site on the planet. I use it every day when I'm on doing stats and research for the Brewers. Let's just go through his percentile rankings real quick on Corbin Burns. Average exit velocity, 96th percentile. Hard hit rate, 94th. Expected ERA, 99th percentile. Barrel rate, 97th percentile. Whiff rate, 97th percentile. Chase rate, 98th percentile. Fastball spin rate, 100th percentile. Walk rate, 92nd percentile. Strikeout rate, 97th percentile. It's everything is red. I mean, like,
it's red.
Everything is on the very far right side of the slider. He is absolutely inhuman, and it's a joy to watch him in navy and gold.
It is, and the other thing that's remarkable to what he's been able to do is he's been able to totally dominate left-handed hitters, right? So you would think a guy throwing a cutter, you know, kind of leak over the middle of the plate, and that's what was happening, and we talked about this on yesterday's show, but that's what was happening in 2019. Now he's shown the ability to actually use that to his advantage and master that backdoor cutter. And so in 2019, he had a 1,200 OPS against lefties. I believe that's what the splits were. That's really high. So now last year, the splits against lefties, it was like 520 or something crazy. So that's, again, just another way that he's been able to take a huge step. It's not just like this guy took a tiny little step forward, right? That most guys do as they progress and learn how to pitch at the big league level. He took like the most enormous step forward ever, I think, probably in the history of the game. Perhaps. How do you go from that bad to becoming that dominant?
It's so, a pitching lab.
It totally is. It totally is. And I love how he talked about how he grades his own stuff and how he evaluates his own performance. He's totally process oriented, and I think that's super cool. He's totally outcome independent thinker, right? And he just stays in the moment and worries about the process. I think that's really cool as well.
No wonder he's such a good golfer. It makes total sense. But to your point about OPS, 2019 against lefties, his OPS was 1271. Okay, terrible.
Terrible.
And then his OPS against lefties last season was 561. He more than cut it in half last season. That's wild. Good for Corbin. We're excited for him. And I also want to give a quick shout out about Brandon Woodruff. He was asked about it yesterday after his start. I want to get the quote right here as well. That he said, look, Corbin's going to lead us off, and rightfully so. There is no toxic energy in this clubhouse, man.
No, and how cool is this team? This team is just pulling for each other. Like you said, no toxic energy, no toxicity among the guys. There's a healthy competition among that group. I'm sure that there is, but no rooting for each other when it's not your day to start and hoping, you know, secretly the guy gives up, you know, a four spot or something like that. Believe it or not, that happens in baseball. Not on this team. So I just love that about this group. There, everyone's pulling for each other. Everyone's having fun. Everyone's trying to win. And I think they are going to win a lot this year.
I agree. It should be a lot of fun to watch. So again, Corbin Burns is officially your opening day starter. That is the headline of today's game. I mean, we can just briefly remind you that yesterday's final score, I got to pull it up myself. I didn't even get a chance to watch the game because I was working at another game. They lost to the Guardians by a final of 10-3. Big whoop. It's spring training. We're 8 days away from the opener. So let's get on to our NL Central preview here. But before we do that, we're going to thank some of our partners. In fact, our newest one is going to lead us off here, Athletic Greens. I actually started taking this product last season during the caddying year. It just gives me so much of an energy boost, and I feel great. And it's so simple for my morning routine. Look, I'm up in the morning at 6 a.m. I have to get in the car and go. It's so easy because it's just one scoop of Athletic Greens into a glass of water on my way to Erin Hills, and I'm repping Erin Hills today here on my sweater. And it gives me an infinite number of great antioxidants, great probiotics, vitamins, minerals. I mean, this is better than your, you know, daily supplement pills that you may have all lined up in your pharmacy or in your bathroom, right? Athletic Greens can take care of everything for you. So simple for you in the morning. Look, I'm a cup of coffee in my Athletic Greens, and it even costs less than that cold brew that I keep going to get. Shout out to our homies at Colectivo. You're investing in an all-in-one nutritional insurance. It's cheaper than getting all the different supplements that what you would get in Athletic Greens. And it's a great story. They were created when the founder actually was having gut health issues. This is another benefit that I've noticed as well, if you really want to get into it. But it ended up complicating a supplement routine, and the founder, couldn't figure out how to fix it. So he created Athletic Greens and found out a new routine for himself. Now, Athletic Greens wants you to try it, and to make it easy, they're going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/MLB Network. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/MLB Network to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Vinny, we're going to start talking about the NL Central. And I know a lot of folks want to say, well, it's the Brewers to win. And quite frankly, it's true. The Cardinals are kind of stuck in this weird spot where they're bringing back Tio Albert, but their main arms that are going to contribute to them are going to be injured at the start of the year. The Cubs may not have enough offense to keep them afloat. The Brewers are certainly the favorite in the Central, and we're going to talk about the Cubs and the Cardinals next week. But today we're going to start with the bottom feeders, the guys at the bottom that, quite frankly, the Brewers are going to need to take the majority of the wins against this season, the Reds and the Pirates. I mean, last season, the Brewers were 14-5 against the Pirates, and against the Reds, they were 10-9. Granted, a completely different team than what they're rolling into this year. But right there, that's 24 wins and only 14 losses in your division. And if you're saying they're going to try to win 100 games, this is where you can start getting them.
And I doubled down on that in the preseason show today that we did record. So catch that. Make sure everyone catches that. I definitely doubled down on that 100-win call. But yeah, I mean, you got to take care of business against the teams you should beat. That's totally cliche. The Brewers have done a really good job of that in general, and especially teams in your division. Like you said, the Reds might be a little bit better than what we think. I know we're going to get into them here in a little bit, but I a couple of rookie pitchers that'll make their debuts in the big leagues, we'll see how they pan out, and that could keep them, you know, competing a little bit better than we think. But yeah, the Pirates are definitely a team. They'll be good in a few years, but it's definitely a team you want to beat every single time out. So, 100-win season, you got to just lay the hammer down on both clubs.
So let's talk about the Pirates first, all right? This will be the first segment we talk about. Last season, the Pirates were 61-101. Just 100 losses is demoralizing, and quite frankly, they don't look much better this season. They do have prospects on the way, but how much will they be able to impact in a rookie season remains to be seen for Derek Shelton. It's his third year for Derek Shelton over there in the Steel City. Let's talk about Zips has projected them at an 8-win improvement year over year at 69 wins and 93 losses, which would match their 2019 record when they started this tanking and rebuilding process. I guess that would mark as some improvement. Key departures for them, Jacob Stallings, who was actually second in WAR for them last season.
Crazy.
Traded to Miami. Trevor Cahill has gone to free agency, and Colin Moran was placed off waivers and picked up by the Cincinnati Reds. Not much on additions other than our sweet prince, Daniel Vogelbach. First impressions of the Pittsburgh Pirates in 22.
Yeah, they're going to be bad. That was my first take on this when I was looking at this roster. This group is not looking very healthy in terms of talent. Brian Reynolds is a superstar in the making. We all know that.
Agreed.
And Ke'Bryan Hayes, I also think, is going to be a superstar. He's going to be an all-star. I really believe in his talent. He is an absolute, stud defensively over there at third base. I think the bat will come along with it. Kevin Newman at shortstop, he's sure-handed, but he cannot hit, doesn't seem. And then, they don't have anybody that can really impact on a consistent basis their offense besides Brian Reynolds at this point. Daniel Vogelbach's a nice piece for a team like the Brewers, maybe, to get on base, but he's certainly not going to anchor your lineup. And then their pitching staff, a couple arms I do like, but I'm rambling. The first impression is they're bad and they're going to be bad this year.
Their opening day starter might be Jose Quintana. Yeah. It might go to the sophomore kid, Mitch Keller, because he's the future for them.
Right.
But it's not looking pretty out there at PNC Park. Like I said, Brian Reynolds is the top baseball reference war player from a year ago, a 6.0 win player on the worst team in baseball, second worst team in baseball behind Baltimore probably. He hit .302 last year with a .912 OPS, and he's still – he's the only anchor in that lineup to worry about, and he still put up those numbers. And obviously he was subjected to trade rumors last year, but – this dude can play, and they want to build around him. And I really want to see Brian Reynolds continue to flourish, given his talent. I've seen him since 2015 back at Vanderbilt and back on Cape Cod. There's no other way to sugarcoat it, really. The Pirates are bad. Their payroll is only $45 million heading into this season. They are really slashing things.
Yeah, you wonder if they're, obviously they're tanking. It's not like a totally intentional tank. They're a small market team. They need to rebuild. They need to regroup with some prospects. And they do have a couple interesting guys in O'Neill Cruz. This guy is a, how do you describe O'Neill Cruz? He looks like Giancarlo Stanton.
A massive shortstop. If Giancarlo Stanton played shortstop.
And could move really well in athletic, right? So he's a fun player to watch. JT Brubaker, just switching gears a little bit, I'm surprised that he had such a poor year. He looked really good early on against the Brewers. Through May, I'm just looking here, all the way through June, his ERA was still respectable in the 3.8 range. Then all of a sudden in July, he just gave up a bunch of crooked numbers. In a row, like 10 really bad starts in a row to end his season. So he ended up with it's a little deceiving. I don't know. I'm curious to see what happened there. I know the second half was pretty bad, if he was hurt or whatever. But, he's an interesting arm if those last 10 starts didn't happen. But other than that, I don't see much else and see many other guys that could help. This shortstop, who was that shortstop last year that kind of came on and he played a bunch and kind of hurt the Brewers? I should know this. Sorry about that. It's from the Dominican.
Would it be Wilmer Defoe?
No. Sorry, I just had it up. I'll think of it.
Anyway. Rodolfo Castro?
Yes. He's interesting as well. Talented.
Yeah. He had 5 homers. I think all of them were against the Brewers last year. But anyway, the Pirates, not looking good. Zips has them at 69 wins this year, dead last in the Central. I'm not a betting man, but I think that's a pretty good number, maybe even a little less, given how top-heavy this division is. between the Brewers and the Cardinals are going to beat up on them. And then the Cubs are still improved from over a year over year, so even though they lost everybody. So I just we'll see what happens in Pittsburgh for them in the future. Let's talk about the Reds. Before we do that, remind you about our good friends at Built Bar. Of course, they've got amazing flavors on their Built Bars that are covered in 100% real chocolate. And their macros, if you're really into it, are amazing as well. 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, and 17 grams of protein. The flavors are awesome. Mint brownie, coconut almond. They've got new flavors every month. They make them all delicious. There's new flavors all the time. If they think a flavor might be good, they're going to make it. It's going to be delicious. It's going to be good for you. They figure out how to make it taste great first and then make it healthy. I don't know how they do it, but they pull it off every single time. They even got the puffs, those little protein-infused marshmallows. They're always coming up with new ways to give you the best for your performance and what you need in your diet. Got a great offer for you. Go to built.com, B-U-I-L-T, and use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. Again, that's built.com, promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. The Cincinnati Reds were a thorn in the Brewers' side last year. I mean, nearly 500. They looked like they were going to, it was a 3-4-horse race for a little bit there in the Central, depending on what the Cubs were going to do, if they were going to blow it up at the deadline, which they ultimately did. But with the Cardinals hanging around and the Brewers running away with it, and the Reds with that offense, man, and now it is all gone. It is all gone. Look, listen to these departures as they are slashing payroll right now. Eugenio Suarez, Jesse Winker, Tucker Barnhart, Nick Castellanos, just on the offensive side. Pitching side, Amir Garrett, Sonny Gray, Michael Lorenzen, Wade Miley. I mean, almost all of these guys are starters or winning contributing players. Zips has them at 75 wins. I don't see how they get to 75 wins, personally.
Yeah, 75 is a little bit steep. It depends on Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo, in my opinion, because if Joey Votto does what he did last year, which was absolutely incredible, you know, you do have some semblance of an offense here, although they don't have much in the outfield in terms of help. Jake Fraley is an interesting guy. They got in a trade with Seattle. And obviously Tommy Pham seems to be kind of like regressing a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, they're going to miss Castellanos, and they're certainly going to miss Winker as well. So, man, it's 75 probably is a little steep. But, you know, Tyler Mahle's a decent arm, more than decent. He's an up-and-comer. And then, again, they do need starting pitching help. I'm just looking at this rotation. They're going to rely on Mike Minor once he's healthy. Vlad Gutierrez, just kind of a thumber. He had a pretty good rookie season. Reaver San Martin is an electric arm.
I saw him actually yesterday pitching against the Rangers.
How did he look?
He wasn't blowing it by anybody by any means, but he's such a funky arm angle that guys were confused by his changeup, and then early on fastballs, and timing was varied. He works quickly. I wonder if that can work for an entire season. For a team seeing it for the first time, it could be funky, but I don't know if it can work for an entire year.
Right. Yeah. So at the end of the day, I think their pitching is going to be their downfall, their major downfall. They're going to probably have a bunch of losing streaks. But, you know, they will score some runs at times, again, especially with Joey Votto, his resurgence, and then Jonathan India is an up-and-comer as well. So, yeah, doesn't look good for the Reds either.
Well, and here's a crazy thing I noted about their payroll right now, as they are slashing payroll. The big reason they traded Jesse Winker to the Mariners was because the Mariners were willing to take on Eugenio Suarez's salary, $50 million off the books right there. So it's not so much that the Mariners wanted Suarez. He still is, you know, arguably an improvement from Kyle Seager, who also had a resurgence in the final year of his career last year. I think he hit like 38 bombs last year for the Mariners. So they get Suarez, who's also swing and miss a lot too. But as far as the current payroll for the Reds, $110 million is the estimated payroll right now. But yet $51 million of that payroll is going to three guys. Three guys. Votto, Moustakas, and Minor. Almost half your payroll is only going to three guys.
That's crazy. And Are you counting the money that they took on as well? Did they take on any money from?
No, they gave all that money to the Mariners.
Gotcha. Okay. Wow. So that's incredible. Yeah. So, yeah, it's just where they're at. You know, I mean, they weren't going to go deeper into the well. They obviously felt like they needed to make a change, a little shift in direction. You know, it's hard, Dom. I want to get your take on this. If you're going to go kind of rebuild mode, I'm a believer in just go full tank mode. Now, I hate tanking. I hate the word. It's just full rebuild, in my opinion. Just sell it all. Get whatever you can for it. You know, slash payroll and then try and get a bunch of prospects and try. I hate saying this, but then you get one of the first three or first five with the lottery system draft picks for the following few years. And that's how you got to do it. Otherwise, if you try and do what the Reds are going to do, I as a scout with the Rangers, they did that same thing and it doesn't get you anywhere. It keeps you mediocre for a few years and then you get bad with nothing in the tank for the system. So I don't know. What's your take on a rebuild, how to do it? Just curious on that.
Well, this is exactly what Mark Adanasio was saying this past weekend, and we talked about it in Monday's episode, saying the Brewers and himself, they never want to be the team that spends and spends and spends to keep up and then eventually have to reduce spending. That's not a plan that's sustainable, because eventually the bill's going to come due, and you're going to realize, oh, I've got this aging superstar, this aging superstar, this aging superstar, and you have to adjust completely and, you know, kind of overreact in the other direction. And that's what the Reds are going through again. I mean, they only won 67 games in 2018 when they started this latest process. I mean, they got hit hard by 2020, given that could have been a really good year for them with Moustakas and Castellanos. That was the whole point of it. And then last year, injuries did hurt them too, with Winker missing the last month with an intercostal strain. Gray wasn't quite himself the whole year. Luis Castillo got off to an awful start and then got things going. But, I mean, look, they're keeping Castillo as it stands right now. I mean, they're adding big league players to their credit in these trades. And Jake Fraley's probably fringe. They added Jake Bowers, added Tommy Pham, added Colin Moran. It's not like they're just relying on guys that are 20 years old and A-ball right now. You know, they're going to have some guys to stick around to see if they can provide for them, which will make them a tough opponent to face, given how much experience will be in that dugout. And it's a David Bell managed team. You know David Bell is going to get the best out of his team.
Yeah, he's got a history of that for sure. He's competitive as can be. He was competitive as can be as a player, and I know his players love playing for him. They go to war for him. So yeah, that's all really good points. I thought it was interesting what I heard Council say in a soundbite today from spring training, that these guys, the Brewers, are kind of lucky. But I think it's more than luck. I think it's obviously what Chris Hook and the pitching lab and the whole pitching team has done with the pitching group. But they've got a bunch of really good starting pitchers arriving at the same time. When I say arriving, I mean like really taking those steps and really establishing themselves as top talent in the major leagues all at the same time. So that's what a rebuild or a team that's kind of going for the World Series, you rebuild and then hopefully everyone gets good right at the same time. You see that all the time, you know, throughout the history of the game, and the Brewers have that right now. But yeah, I don't see that happening here with the Reds in the future. Maybe with Lodolo and Hunter Green, those are really two good arms that I do see. But you just never know how those arms are going to pan out.
And they got the TCU kid Brandon Williamson in the deal with the Mariners too. He should be a star as well. But that's pretty much wrapping up our thought on the Reds. Oh, by the way, quick trivia. Who do you think led the Reds in WAR last season?
Oh, boy. Was it... it has to be Wade Miley.
That's correct. 5.9 yeah. WAR, 12-7 record, 3.37 ERA, and they let him walk for free down to Chicago. pretty crazy. Pretty crazy what they got going on.
He cost $10 million, so just to be fair, but yeah.
Well, he got it, but they had a buyout option for him, but they put him on waivers instead, so they didn't get any compensation in return. So
They did not. Yeah, I suppose they could have traded him for something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, someone would have taken that on.
Yeah, it's wild. But anyway, that's a little preview of the bottom half of what's projected anyway of the NL Central. Next week, we'll have the Cubs and the Cardinals in the rivalry episode. Tomorrow, we are going to be previewing for part of our episode the catching core and the DH position, how creative Crick Council could be getting with that as far as our positional previews go. This is shocking to say. We are almost pretty much a week away, 8 days away from opening day. I just get more and more excited as we get closer and closer.
Goosebumps? No, not quite. That's because it's still 20 degrees outside and it's cold in my basement here. But it's, I'm really, really excited for opening day, and it can't get here fast enough.
And also, a tiny bit of breaking news that came out yesterday is that, you know, you've seen the City Connect jerseys that have popped up around baseball. You know, the Miami Awesome, the, what was it, the Sugar ones, the Sugar Kings, for like the Havana, the Cuban influence. You had the South Side for Chicago. You had the Wrigleyville ones. The Brewers are going to get a Nike City Connect jersey coming in June. So,
oh, wow.
That could be fun. I'm
is there a tease on the design of that?
I have not seen any designs, but I just hope it has something to do with, you know, beer and barrel, man. I mean,
I'm sure.
I don't know what else they could do with it, but I'm really intrigued to see what they come up with. June 24th, I believe, is the day I saw that the Brewers will wear them for the first time.
That'll be cool. Yeah, no, I thought it was interesting. I was watching the broadcast of the Giants game, Giants Brewers game in Scottsdale. It was a night game. Must have been a week ago, and I love how the commentators, I forget the name, you know everybody, all the broadcasters' names, Krakow and whoever
Kruko.
Was doing the...
Kruko and Kite.
Sorry. Yep, they were commenting on how much they loved the Brewers' uniforms. I think the Brewers' uniforms right now are so clean and cool. I think they're the best in the big leagues. I love the changes to the whole scheme and the colors that they made. Mm-hmm. It's just a little aside, I thought it was cool how the other broadcast team mentioned that.
That's what I've heard as well. I think Brewers probably have the best jerseys in the National League. Now, the Dodgers probably get a little bit of a pass because they are, you know, such a classic jersey, you know, since the 50s. I'm impartial to the Oakland A's, green and gold. Kelly Green, the only team that has green in their color screen. But anyway, this is not a uniform podcast. Cool. It's the Brewers podcast. That's going to wrap up our episode since we're talking about uniforms now. Vinny, thanks so much for hopping in. We will see you tomorrow. Thanks to everybody who tuned in and making us your first listen of the day. We'll see you tomorrow. Until then, keep on swinging.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.